This is Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. I'm Lizzie Peabody. Deep in the hills of West Virginia, Ed and Carol Daniels are growing a secret garden. Well, a secret farm, really. And it has to be secret because the plants they're growing are worth a lot of money.
How many cameras do you have? I'm just curious. Like,
there's multiples.
Two? Yeah. Ten?
No, there's a lot more. I mean, there's cameras in hidden areas that
we've how many cameras are watching us right now?
Don't pee in the woods.
This herb only grows in a very small band of the United States, mostly the Appalachian Mountains, from Canada down to Alabama. That's part of what makes it so valuable. Another part is how it makes you feel when you eat it.
It gives you more energy than most energy drinks. Actually, I have friends that race mountain bikes professionally, and they got in trouble. They considered it as doping.
Really?
Because it gives them so much energy. But it's all natural.
Ed's not talking about any illegal drug. He's talking about American ginseng, a small plant with a precious root that people have been using as medicine since well before Europeans set foot on American soil. It's so valuable that even with all this security, a few months back, a couple of people drove deep into the forest, snuck into Ed's farm with ski masks and headlamps, and dug up his ginseng plants under the cloak of night. Carol estimates the thieves stole more than $50,000 worth of roots.
What did it feel like to discover that?
It was detrimental.
Devastating. Yeah. I mean, to plant every single plant one by one on our knees with our hands, you know, it's a lot of time, but
it just goes to show that people are ruthless. If they think they can get ahead by stealing from you, they will.
Wild ginseng is so highly valued around the world that it's been dug to extinction nearly everywhere except Appalachia. Demand for wild American ginseng is highest in Asia, where people refer to it as king of the herbs. In America, it has another nickname.
Ginseng is the green gold. It is known as the green gold.
This is June Wen, a curator of botany at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History, and probably one of the most knowledgeable people about ginseng on the entire planet. She says wild American ginseng is known as green gold because it can sell for as much as $700 a pound in the United States. And it sells for 10 times that in Asia. That's like the weight of a squirrel for the price of a used car. Or a trip to Maui. But here's the deal with anything referred to as gold. It's not easy to find. And green gold is getting a lot harder to find.
In 1995, I worked in this area. I could have found 30, 40 ginseng plants. Now I go, I found one. So it's very, very heartbreaking for me to see the extinction of the species in the wild. Yeah.
The money that can be made from wild American ginseng is causing people to rip it out of the ground at a frenzied and unsustainable pace. And that's pushing it even closer to the edge of extinction. So this time on Side Door, we dig into the history of how ginseng claimed its throne as king of the herbs and what's being done to protect its reign well into the future. That's coming up after the break. You probably have a vague idea of what ginseng is. You might have seen it listed as an ingredient on an energy drink or on a packet of tea. Before I started researching this episode, I had no idea what ginseng was, other than the name of my aunt's dog. And this is what's led me to Ed and Carol Daniels' farm in West Virginia. I'm sitting on their front porch in an old wooden chair. It's cool and sunny, and the leaves are dancing in the breeze. It's this beautiful fall afternoon. And Ed and Carol are telling me all about ginseng.
ginseng is a medicine with unlimited powers.
The word ginseng literally translates to essence of man in Mandarin because people believe it cures whatever ails you.
It gives you energy, and it's supposed to be good for diabetes. It's good for your manhood.
Immunity, stress, your whole body. Mm-hmm. It's a heal-all.
Some people call it a cross between Viagra, Prozac, and coffee. But Ed doesn't like the comparison to caffeine.
It gives you the energy, but I think it's a cleaner energy. Mm. And it clears your mind a lot, too. So,
wow.
Caffeine, I think, sometimes clouds that up.
The roots are the most prized part of the ankle-high plant because people believe that's where all its powers are found. People in South Korea like to cook with fresh ginseng root. People in China dry the root into a powdered medicine. Ed takes ginseng every morning in a tincture form. When I ask what that means, he slides a massive glass canning jar towards me.
What's in there?
This here's probably moonshine.
Moonshine-soaked ginseng roots. Ed's own formula, made with local moonshine and ginseng grown on his farm. The alcohol absorbs the medicine from the root, giving you a nice liquid ginseng tonic.
The stronger the alcohol, the stronger the medicine.
Ed is what you might call a connoisseur of ginseng. He doesn't touch ginseng from big industrial farms, which is where most of it is grown. For him, ginseng's got to be wild, or grown on his property in wild conditions.
I try to keep it as wild as possible, and we don't feed it. It's just naturally fed from the beech trees and the maple trees, and it has an earthy taste.
Yeah, what does it taste like?
You want to try it?
Ed twists open the rusty metal top of the mason jar and dips a spoon in. Carol passes it to me and explains what to do.
Put it underneath your tongue and let it sit there for like 30 to 60 seconds.
Okay, put it right under my tongue?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so the first thing I taste is moonshine, which is not far off from rubbing alcohol. And the next thing I taste is, well, it kind of tastes like a forest.
It's very hard to describe this taste.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something I recognize, but I can't, like...
Place what it is.
I can't place what it is.
You've done more ginseng today than I've done in years. I can't believe you've done so much.
Wait a minute.
No,
but you're the expert.
Up for a week, man. You might go home and clean till sometime next week.
Well, I didn't know.
Now you do.
To be clear, I slept just fine. But I definitely felt a jolt of energy, which is part of what has made ginseng so sought after for millennia. Records of it date way back to ancient China, where soldiers would eat it before battle and then put it on wounds after the fight. People back then used it to treat all sorts of ailments.
Digestion, tiredness, the effects of childbirth, and then one of the big ones that you'll find is, male performance problems.
This is Betty Belenis, curator at the Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage. She says wild ginseng used to be all over China, but its healing properties were so highly prized, people dug it out wherever they found it. One Chinese doctor is quoted as saying, "A person would rather take a handful of ginseng than a cartload of gold and jewels." And around 1,000 years ago, wild Asian ginseng became so hard to find in China, it effectively went extinct.
It was saved just for royalty, the emperors, because it started becoming so scarce and so valuable because it was so highly regarded.
If there wasn't a Chinese dynasty named after your family, you probably were not going to get your hands on ginseng. And that was kind of the way things went for centuries, until along came a French-Canadian priest. One day in 1716, Father Joseph François Lafiteau was just hanging around in Montreal, flipping through a book of medicinal Asian herbs, as one does. And he stopped on an illustration of a ginseng plant, a little thing with green leaves, red berries, and a big, solid root, like a twisty carrot. And when he read the description, he thought, all healing powers? That's pretty cool. So he kept reading and realized, hey, this plant grows in the same general climate that we have right here in Canada. How about that? So he set down his book and he headed out into the woods. This is a passage from his journal.
After spending 3 months looking for the ginseng, by accident I found it. It was ripe, and the color of the fruit attracted my attention. I pulled it up and with joy took it to an Indian I had engaged to help me hunt for it. She recognized it at once as one of the plants the Indians used.
Now, Father Lafitau had no idea if what he'd found was actually ginseng, but it was remarkably similar. And he learned that local indigenous tribes were using it for the same things as people in China. Things like helping with digestion, giving energy, healing wounds, bolstering manhood.
So, it was out there and Native Americans were using it. In a lot of Native American cultures, it's considered a sacred plant.
If this was the same plant that people in China were calling King of the Herbs, Lafitau would be one happy priest. So he set out to confirm that what he had found was indeed ginseng. Today, we'd just Google it. But back then, it was hard to share and verify information halfway around the world. Well, unless you were a Jesuit.
So the Jesuits were kind of like the internet of the day.
What? Wow.
I like to call it that. Anyway, they communicated with one another.
Father Lafitau sketched up the plant and mailed the picture out to the network of Jesuit priests stationed across China. After months of waiting, he got a reply.
Bingo.
So it was ginseng.
Yes. And things kind of took off from there.
Turns out, ginseng wasn't just in Canada. In 1738, Benjamin Franklin got so excited that ginseng was growing in Pennsylvania, he declared, "We have the pleasure of acquainting the world that the famous Chinese plant called ginseng is now discovered in this province." The discovery of ginseng on American soil turned out to be pretty clutch when colonists declared their independence and sent King George packing. The newly formed United States desperately needed a strong trade partner outside the vast British Empire. And, well, America had something China wanted.
The first economic venture to China, the ship was full of ginseng.
Over the next few decades, China was all about getting that sweet, sweet American ginseng. The Empress of China even sent her surgeon to Virginia to collect 30 tons of the root. And this ginseng trade created a new source of income for people in the Appalachian Mountains.
It was a boon. It became something that people knew about and could fall back on in times of need.
Digging ginseng was like an old-school side gig, the Uber driving of the 18th and 19th centuries. And it also provided a much-needed source of income for people who had no land or formal education. After the American Civil War, formerly enslaved African Americans sold and traded ginseng to start building a new life. Even to this day, ginseng is sort of a step stool to help some people in Appalachia climb out of poverty. Ed Daniels is one of those people.
Growing up poor, I'd see kids with new clothes going to school, and I always wanted to be that kid. So I went out and dug ginseng and sold it, and I was like, wow, I got new shoes now, I got new pants, and boy, I was 14, 15. I was like, man, I'd like to have a car. And I got into it really heavy for a couple of summers and dug ginseng and saved up and bought my first car, which was a 74 Volkswagen Beetle for $500. And I was so proud of it because I'd earned the money from digging roots.
But as logging, coal mining, and other jobs get harder to find in these regions, more people are digging ginseng to make ends meet. And that worries Ed about the future of the plant.
And I've went into places that, when, as a kid, the whole hillside or that cove was just green. You go back now, it's not green. Mm. It's done. You know, and it, you dig it out, it's gone.
So what can be done to save wild American ginseng from going the way of its Asian cousin? We'll explore that just ahead. Plus, I head to the forest to see if an amateur digger like myself can strike green gold. That's coming up after the break. I'm trudging along a muddy trail just outside Washington, D.C. with June Wen, botanist with the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History. We're close to the city. You can actually still hear the freeway.
You can hear it, you know, you can hear it from this forest because we're really pretty close to the freeway.
June is taking me ginseng hunting. And I'd tell you where we are, but the first rule of ginseng hunting is that you don't tell people where you're ginseng hunting.
We won't tell people where we were. We'll just say we were in a place.
It's here, you
No, don't say it on the mic.
Here's what I can tell you about where we are. It's an old forest with lots of different plants and trees. Ginseng is an extremely slow-growing herb that loves shade, and these old trees provide plenty of it. Ginseng also tends to grow on slopes because it likes to get plenty of water but not sit in water.
So, June, tell me what we're looking for. Like, how will I recognize a ginseng plant when I see it?
It's quite an unusual plant that it has often three or four leaves at the top of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
They form an umbrella-like structure.
Oh.
No other plants in this forest would be like that. So it is unique. And often it has a cluster of red fruits in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's like saying hello to you. It's really nice and pretty.
So we're looking for a plant with green leaves that form a sort of umbrella. And in the center of the leaves are red berries. But when we went hunting in September, most of the berries were gone, making it really hard to find a plant.
This isn't it, is it, June? Right here?
No, that's a little hickory.
Oh. Dang it, these hickory trees keep fooling me.
But eventually, after scanning the forest and putting all my focus and attention on finding ginseng, through sheer determination, mixed with a little luck, I still did not find anything. But June did. So, hey, that's a win.
Oh, you found one?
Yeah, we found one. Look at this one.
Oh, wow.
It's an older plant. The root goes there. See, it's a very old, well-grown plant.
The plant is only about the height of my ankle, but June estimates it's probably 15 to 20 years old. It's hiding between two fallen trees that have formed a V shape and created a nice little cradle for it to hide in.
The ginseng plants do not like attention. It likes, they like to hide somewhere. So they are very precious, yeah, very precious.
June likes to call ginseng precious, kind of like you'd describe a ruby or an emerald. And I think that's a great word for it. It's extremely valuable and hard to find. And when you do see a plant in the wild, it feels special. Kind of like when a wild animal feels comfortable enough to take food out of your hand. Naturalist William Bartram wrote in 1791, "The Cherokees speak of ginseng as a sentient being, able to make itself invisible to those unworthy to gather it." I am apparently unworthy. But June, on the other hand...
The ginseng... I think it knows that I won't harm them. So sometimes I think ginseng plants jump into my eyes. I hike with my husband. He cannot see the plants. I can. So it's amazing.
She's also, of course, a highly trained botanist who has been researching ginseng since the early 80s. And over those 30-plus years, researchers and scientists still haven't solved the mystery behind ginseng's medicinal power.
Because the compound in the ginseng root is very complex. If you test one compound or another one individually, sometimes it's very hard to demonstrate whether or not the plants have the effect. You know, this is a very controversial issue.
People do agree, however, that wild ginseng is more powerful than farmed ginseng. June says there's a simple reason for that. The denser the root, the more concentrated the power. Farmed ginseng grows really fast in loose, fertilized soil, making it big but not as dense. Wild ginseng, on the other hand, grows really slowly in tightly packed soil, making it small and very dense. So a tiny wild root may be just as powerful as an enormous farmed root. This is why wild American ginseng is so prized. But because it's so rare and so valuable, there are tons of restrictions about when and where you can dig it. Every state has its own set of laws, but you can really only harvest wild ginseng on private land. And there's a ginseng hunting season, just like an animal hunting season. That's usually 4 months in the fall. And then there are rules about where you can sell wild ginseng. If you're a digger and it's hunting season, you can sell to a certified ginseng dealer. And then those dealers turn around and sell the plants to people in China or South Korea.
It's a very mysterious kind of... We've talked to a lot of ginseng dealers. They're very hesitant to tell us. They never tell us exactly who's buying it.
This is Smithsonian's Betty Belenis again. She says dealer operations can range from highly professional outfits to some guy in a pickup truck in the Walmart parking lot. Wildlife rangers have sent her photos of ginseng deals going down.
They'll send us pictures of people buying a big load of ginseng, and it'll be, like, really dark out, and we're like, is this legit?
Because ginseng is so highly regulated, it finds itself in a lot of shadiness, even after it's left the forest. In 2015, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife agent went undercover as a ginseng dealer in Pennsylvania. In his report, he wrote, quote, ginseng is used like currency for payments for just about anything. Drugs, firearms, you name it.
I think all of us involved in this are concerned.
This is Leslie Stark, stopper of ginseng shadiness. That's not actually her job title, but that's basically what she does.
I'm the program manager for the North Carolina Plant Conservation Program.
Leslie's job is to outsmart poachers who want to steal wild ginseng plants from North Carolina's public lands. And she has a pretty nifty method for thwarting these illegal ginseng diggers.
It's really complicated. That's possibly the best term for it. So it's a multifaceted, like, system for permanently staining ginseng roots.
The uncomplicated version is that Leslie finds roots in the wild and dyes them. Kind of like the exploding ink pack in all the bank heist films, but without the explosion.
So you find a ginseng plant growing in native soil, and you, with your fingers or tools, you will excavate the root. And then we use a multi-step process I'm not going to describe in full detail because it would probably compromise future cases on how exactly this works.
So it's a secret.
It's a secret.
Okay.
So we apply these different materials to the root itself, to the skin of the root. Mm-hmm. And then we simply rebury it and walk away.
Over time, the dye becomes invisible. So the person digging it illegally won't see it. But when they try to sell it to a dealer, the dealer has a device that can scan for the ink. And if the dealer finds a dyed root, they know they're standing face to face with a poacher.
Our dealers are our first line of defense. Outside of observing an actual illegal harvest in that moment, this is the next step where this illicit activity could be detected.
The dyes also make it easier to prosecute poachers in court. Otherwise, there would be no way to prove the roots were dug illegally.
Court cases that are actively using this marking technique have had a near 100% conviction rate. I mean, it really stands up well.
In a court of law, that's mm-hmm. brilliant. Dying roots and limiting the amount of ginseng that can be harvested are great ways to protect what's left in the wild. But it doesn't help to restore what's already been dug up. That's where Ed Daniels comes back into the story.
A lot of juveniles in here, the small ginseng, as you can see.
Oh, yeah, these tiny little guys.
Yeah, here's one.
We're back on Ed's farm, which, if you remember, doesn't really look like a farm at all. It just looks like a forest. Oh, I see. So this is all, because this looks accidental, but it's all...
Yeah, I made all this.
Ed's growing ginseng in as natural a setting as possible. He spreads wild ginseng seeds onto the forest floor and lets nature do the rest. By growing plants like this, Ed is hoping to ease demand on the truly wild ginseng.
I could dig this root up and show you there's no difference in the roots that's coming out of the wild.
Ed's also part of a growing number of ginseng hunters turned ginseng stewards. He says he took too much wild ginseng when he was younger, and now he wants to give back. And that involves more than just sowing seeds.
So, and I use this as our teaching area.
Ed regularly invites nearby schools to bring students to his farm. And within these fertile young minds, Ed plants ideals. of working in harmony with Mother Nature. He teaches children how to grow and harvest ginseng sustainably. The single most important lesson, leave the root in the ground. Instead, pick the leaves.
The top's what we want to get people into, and it's big medicine. It has the same value as the root. It's just everybody's always dug the root.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. So there's really no need to dig as many roots as...
That's what we're trying to teach, to be more sustainable.
Research shows that ginseng leaves and berries have the same medicinal powers as the roots. Yeah, you need more leaves to equal a root, but they grow back every year. But when you dig a root, it's gone forever. And Ed is hoping future generations will understand the trade-off. Because he wants to see wild American ginseng stick around for a long time to come, as medicine, a source of income, and a vital part of the ecosystem. But as with many natural resources, there's a tension between protecting it and profiting from it. Do you see a time when wild American ginseng could be sustainable in the environment?
I'd like to say yes. I think it's going to be here for a while yet, but it's getting dug out.
I think ginseng, these plants, if we do not protect them, they will become extinct. Like in China, you can no longer find a single wild plant.
But unlike in Asia, there's still wild ginseng left in American forests. It's not too late to protect and conserve it. With smart stewardship, wild American ginseng and the communities who depend on it can thrive for millennia to come.
We need to conserve these valuable resources so not only our generation can enjoy these resources, our children, the future generations, can continue to benefit from these important resources. Yeah.
You've been listening to Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. To learn more about wild American ginseng, check out our newsletter. You can subscribe at si.edu/sidedoor. You can also see some photos from our hunting adventures with June and our visit to Ed and Carol's farm. We'll also share a link to Folklife's ongoing project, American Ginseng, Local Knowledge, Global Roots. For helping with this episode, we want to thank Ed and Carol Daniels, Betty Belenis, Arlene Reiniger, June Wen, Siobhan Stars, and Leslie Stark. Our podcast team is James Morrison, Natalie Boyd, Ann Cananan, Caitlin Schaefer, Tammy O'Neill, Jess Sadek, Lara Koch, and Sharon Bryant. Episode artwork is by Dave Leonard. Extra support comes from Jason and Genevieve at PRX. Our show is mixed by Tarek Fuda. Our theme song and episode music are by Brigmaster Cylinder. If you want to sponsor our show, please email sponsorship@prx.org. I'm your host, Lizzie Peabody. Thanks for listening. Before I forget, you mentioned a man root. What is a man root?
It has the characteristics of a man. You can see the shoulders, the head, the arms, the legs, and especially the male penis.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It has to have a penis?
Yes.
Huh.
And that's the true man root.
Are there any women roots?
Probably a lot more of them than the men.
Oh.
So they're not as valued. Oh. Sorry.
Man, even a small vegetable sculpture of a man is worth more than a sculpture of a woman.
I did not say that. I'm just telling you about the man right
now. From PRX.